This episode of the Disc Golf Podcast is brought to you by OTBDiscs.com. Only the Best Discs has a huge selection with high-quality pictures of each disc, actual disc weights, flatness, and stiffness listed. Did I mention fast shipping? Get it free on your next order at OTBDiscs.com using promo code DGPODCAST. What's up, disc golfers? Welcome to episode 245 of the Disc Golf Podcast. My name is Robin, and alongside me, my longtime friend, avid disc golfer, Joe.
Just to be up front, this podcast, aside from OTB, is sponsored by Lagunitas. And by sponsored by Lagunitas, I mean we bought a whole bunch of Lagunitas.
But that's, I think you're kind of confused about sponsorship here. Because...
Can they sponsor like after the fact? Like we already put it out for free, and then they'll just give us money?
In theory, they could, but that's a really strange kind of way of going about business.
Oh, should we just stop the podcast and get something different? Or
probably not.
That's I mean, we're a little too late. We already had one. I guess I might have lost the sponsor just in my not disdain, maybe just like a slight dislike for the beverage we had in the pre-show.
Why you gotta blast our sponsor on that?
Well, because I know I'm really gonna like. I mean, I know I like what we're drinking right now that we won't review and probably not talk about, and I know I'll like what we review.
Correct.
And I know I'll like what we maybe will also drink later.
This is very cryptic.
Just that pre-show.
Surely extremely confusing for everyone.
We drank a Lagunitas beer on the pre-show. I wasn't a big fan, but I'm usually a big fan of Lagunitas, and I know that we have three other beers, one of which we're drinking right now, that I've had multiple times and very much enjoyed. Actually, we reviewed before and loved.
So Joe went to Lagunitas today and got some Crowlers.
Five hours ago.
Got some Crowlers, and so that's the kind of missing information that those of you are wondering what rambling Joe is talking about right now.
I think they got it.
Yeah. No, they do now. I'm pretty sure they
understood right away what I was talking about. Yep. We have very perceptive listeners.
I mean, I would venture that we have the most intelligent fan base of all.
Well, I think it's a foregone conclusion. I think we know that.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I mean...
Please share it with all your friends.
Superstars.
Let them understand. If you listen to the Disc Golf Podcast, you are in the upper echelon of intelligence.
The way I see it is the DGP fan base is a bunch of Renaissance people.
Yes.
They are highly skilled in a vast array of different disciplines and capable of both being serious and understanding of current topics, yet also just completely dropping to a really low level where we just talk about farts.
Yeah.
Like, the dynamic range of
like
our listeners.
Let me tell you, let me learn you about thermodynamics.
Yeah.
And also, if you fart, I'm going to giggle.
I mean, thermodynamics and farts are probably, I mean, that's... There's some crossover.
Yeah, there. For sure.
Yeah.
But you really got to know your time about to like, understand that. And that's
absolutely.
Our listeners.
That's
what I appreciate about them.
That's you. That's what we appreciate about you. Out there just being rocket scientists and also giggling at fart jokes. It's a fine line. But it's important. And that's why you're here.
So fun story, there's a new director my wife's worked that she was helping onboard, and he's from Canada.
Onboarding, is that, that's not the water and the...
No, that's like when you like, they're brand new and you help like make sure they know what they're doing and
understand
the organization and whatnot.
Got it. You throw powdered sugar on them and spray them with a hose?
Well, you gotta get the lice off, but no, that's not it. Anyway, he's from Canada.
Oh.
And when my wife asked him where he was from...
He said, I'm sorry.
Well, he said it like 15 times just through the conversation.
Yeah.
That's not how he answered the question, but just like... He said Letterkenny.
Okay. Okay.
And then asked my wife if she knew what Letterkenny was, to which she said yes.
And I'm sorry that your wife slept with an interviewee.
No, here. Let me finish. Let me finish.
Famous last one. Words.
If it's a dairy, I'm not worried about it. love dairy, but I'm not worried about dairy. To which he was like, "Oh, you know where that is?" And she basically was like, "Yeah." Like, I don't think she realized it was a fictional place, and it like is based on. So right then he either thinks like she's cool because she somewhat has an understanding of what it is, or like she was just lying because she doesn't realize it's a fictional place and not real. And I quickly was like, can I meet him? Is he from where Jared Ciso is?
So you're telling me that he said he was from Letterkenny and she didn't say, how are you now?
Good and you? No. She's watched very limited episodes. She's watched a few shows with me that she thinks are funny, but she won't dive deep. We've watched a handful of Rick and Morty together, which she likes, but isn't willing to like binge it.
Yeah.
She has watched a decent amount of Big Mouth episodes, but isn't willing to like watch them all. And then same with Letterkenny. She's someone who's like, I watched 3 episodes. I'm good on this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm stoked she's down for 3 episodes, but I'm like, how are you not 3 episodes in? Like, I need to see all of them.
That was a huge missed opportunity.
That's like, what if you watched Friday Night Lights and you watched 4 episodes and you're like, great show. I'll come back to this. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Clear eyes.
Full hearts. Like, can't lose.
Can't lose.
Like, if you don't get 4 episodes into Friday Night Lights and decide all of my waking time is watching all of this, I don't know who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I just
even
I
feel when like, even I feel when like this what's was... her name like killed a guy and who knows what that storyline was like, even when they jumped the shark so fucking hard,
they
did
really
I watch
did.
All of the next 3 seasons after that? You bet I did.
Yeah, you bet I did.
You watch Sorensen or Saracen throw a football and obviously he'd never thrown a football in his life, but is somehow a stud quarterback, I still watched them all.
Also, side note, if you're looking to scratch that Friday Night Lights itch, All American is very, very
What's
similar.
What's that? I don't know what that.
It's on Netflix. It's a.
I don't have Netflix anymore.
It's another high school football show that is very similarly dramatic and, you know, it scratches that itch.
We got rid of Netflix. This is like slowly devolving into a pre-show. We got rid of Netflix because like I just didn't want anything. I didn't really watch anything. And then I Think You Should Leave season 2 came out literally like the next day. And I was like, damn it. Like, that's the one show I loved on Netflix. And the second season came out as soon as I quit Netflix.
All right. Well, we've got a great show for you guys tonight. Tons of disc golf talk. We're going to talk about the PDGA proposed rule changes. We're going to talk about Idlewild.
Proposed by pros.
Proposed. But we're going to talk about Idlewild. We'll also talk about the European Disc Golf Championship briefly. I don't think Joe or I really got into the coverage as far as we did with Idlewild, but we'll still go over the results. And we'll do our world famous deer review, our disc and beer pairing, where we take a disc, we take a beer. We review them both and let you know whether you should bring it on the course. Tonight we have the Mockingbird by Lone Star Discs, which is a
look at
the disc. A 7-speed, 5-glide, -2 turn, 1-fade fairway driver. And we're going to pair that with Lagunitas Hazy Memory, which is an 8% hazy IPA. And we did this one mostly because we think that virtually everyone listening to this podcast can probably get a hold of it unless you're in Europe. Which I still think it's possible, given that Lagunitas is owned by Heineken, but I don't know. So,
but Chicago,
but
you can probably
but the rest of the United States, Hazy Memory is in cans and available. So we wanted to get this one in for everyone, since we review a lot of beers that are California based and
you can't find them anywhere.
We're sorry. So PDGA proposed rule changes. There were quite a few, and I'm not going to go through all of them.
If I'm not a member, do I have to follow those rules?
There is a rule that is actually having to do with being a member.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So now, all B-tier events...
Did you all just find out right now that I didn't read any of these?
Yeah, yeah.
With that comment?
I'm sure everyone's shocked.
What?
I'm certain. Everyone's well, they like, don't send me these emails,
oh, so I'm not a member.
But now, it used to be that only A-tier events required an active PDGA membership. Now, it's B-tier events.
Does that mean you can't drink at B-tier events now, too? Maybe that was always that way, actually. That was always I feel like C-tier is what
it is. With C-tiers, too, you can't... You're technically not supposed to drink at any PDGA-sanctioned event. So, like, that's not a thing. But
like, you only need a PDGA number to, like, get prize money and win, right? So if I'm nowhere close to the top three or
well
cash,
now you would
matter.
Need it to play B-tier events,
like just to sign up for them.
Yep, you cannot play a B-tier event without an active PDGA membership. So that was the thing.
Well, I don't know that I've ever played a B-tier, but I'll be honest, well, we're full in this, right? I can react to this. We're not like
oh, sure.
running well down. I honestly feel I quickly was like, well then fuck it, I'll never play a PDGA event ever. But I'm like, I guess I
honestly so I think that's the point. Like, think of all the tournaments you've seen that get filled up.
Yeah.
Like right away.
Yeah.
I think that the PDGA was trying to prioritize the people that are serious about competing.
Yeah.
And that's why they did this.
And I don't think I ever see myself playing in an A tier, but I could see a B tier happening mm-hmm. at some point.
There's a lot of B tier events.
I honestly do feel like I should heavily consider getting a PDGA number, which I've never actually thought about doing.
Okay.
But I mean, they're the governing, but I mean, they're, I don't know. I'm on the fence.
I mean, it's not a lot of money. And I think that given, I mean, I've seen numerous times where people are waitlisted for B-tier events all over the place, complaining about it, you know, like just like their local tournaments with how the sport has grown. So I think this is one way of kind of making sure that they prioritize the people that are really serious about competing and attempting to get to the level where they can compete at an A-tier in those, you know, pro levels. So
yeah,
if
you
really
want to donate to my PDGA
it.
Number, you can Venmo Sugar Bottom Robin.
What? That's not
whatever amount.
That's not
at Sugar Bottom Robin.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, it's not. I don't need the money for it, so you should actually Venmo it to...
You have the tastiest Venmo, so...
No, you
Sugar Bottom Robin.
Everyone should Venmo it to at Robin Sex Kitten. That's Joe's Venmo. And that'll be the best place to send your money.
No, that's Drew Gibson's Venmo.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he...
You just don't know yet, you know what I'm saying?
Despite the tattoos, he's quite the submissive. Never mind. Anyway.
Oh, sorry. Robin Sugarbottom? No? Okay, we can move on.
So, yeah, I mean, I wasn't planning to bring that rule up. You just brought that in.
You're welcome.
The only one I'm planning to bring up is...
2 meter rule thrown away forever.
Well, there's two, actually. I'll bring
Ooh,
up two.
Okay.
There's two rules.
God, I wish I read these things.
Planning to change. One of them is that instead of when you're OB having to take your 1 meter like perpendicular to the basket, You know, like, so having to take your 1 meter towards the basket, it becomes essentially like a radius, a 1 meter radius.
Well, but here's the thing.
So as long as you can have both feet, your feet in bounds at release of disc, you can actually advance forward. But and the point of this is, remember like, oh, I forget what tournament it was, but like where there was like that corner OB where there was like a little like weird section. Like,
it's probably Golden State. Maybe. I don't know. But there's that one hole that has a really weird island at Lamy. On the back, it's like 6 or 7 that has Lamy, a weird.
That's
little...
not a recent one, though.
Oh, okay, then it's not. No. I'm just thinking of that one hole that has really, really weird spacing of like the OB. Like it's a.
It's more
elliptical
to do with like,
island almost.
It's more to do with like when there's like a corner or a weird spot where there's a kind of OB that is strange based on from what I've seen, it was like fences when it
got
was
it, got it.
But at the same time, it gives a little bit more flexibility to the player. So you can be no matter what 1 meter radius from any OB. In your that disc is through, so you can pick any OB point that is there, and you could, in theory, advance forward. So it's just meant to kind of simplify the rule so that people aren't like kind of like, you know, arguing about it. You know, try to take pressure off the players to interpret where is the OB and what it's supposed to be.
It is funky because I know I've had the exact one I just brought up. I had a weird. Stepping back in bounds and like I stepped more diagonally towards the basket instead of like perpendicular from the OB and realized like, oh, that's not legal right now, but it's a meter away and it's close to the basket. But that's
in
not-
theory, you could advance a meter forward and say you're like doing a step out forehand type thing.
Yeah.
Where you're, as long as you're in bounds, you could advance forward on something like this. So, just meant to simplify it.
And I think
which is the primary goal of all these rule changes, I might add, and I really don't have a problem with any of them.
I think that one will be good, but I think it will simplify it eventually. I think it'll be some funky interpretation.
I don't know. I think it'll be okay. I think it'll be fine. I think like, you know, it'll just be like, I mean, we've already seen people step these things off. They're not, it's not like,
yeah.
No one's holding out a meter stick and figuring it out. People are taking 3 steps and they're putting a disc down. Now you can take 3 steps in any direction from the OB line, and that's fine.
Right. And I think with pros, they understand really well. I just remember like the last update with like that 8x10 rectangle behind the disc. How many things we saw on Slack would be people being like, what about this? What about this? What about this? And I'm then, like, but it makes total sense. Why are you saying that? Like,
and,
do you
and
not
then,
understand what it's saying?
And then we never see anything about it ever. Yeah. The next one is having to do with holding out, it's a pretty major rule change in my opinion. Proposed.
That's what Ramen called Saturdays in college.
Rule change, which is that it takes away the verbiage that states that it must enter. The basket properly, like
right,
like that it must enter, you know, I forget the exact wordage. I can bring it. I got it up. But nonetheless, the change would be that not only does it not matter how the disc gets there, but any disc that comes to rest in the chains in the tray or even wedged in the tray would be considered holding out would be good. It basically everything except on top of the basket or hanging on top of the chain supports. You can't like certain baskets that have chain supports that go wider, that doesn't count. But
or
like
Equid, yeah.
So like if you got a disc catcher from Innova, they got the band, that's not an issue with those ones. But on other like DGA baskets and stuff like that, if it's hanging from the nub above, that wouldn't count because those are the chain supports. So basically though, it's there was already verbiage in the rules stating that a wedge disc could count as holing out if no one saw it. As in,
right. It could have possibly
entered the basket properly and then bounced out and wedged itself, and there's no way you could know that happened. And so that they had that in. And so it was kind of like, just a little bit of just uncertainty.
Hey, CB, I need some soft Vibram discs from you.
So you could, in theory, just say, oh, how do you know it didn't? Like, we saw it out there, but how do you know it didn't? It's 400 feet away. How do you know it didn't do
right.
that?
Well, I'll say the only time I've ever seen that, everybody saw it.
Yeah.
Jam in the side.
Same. But now they have taken away that that stipulation, and a wedge disc would, in theory, count because it is supported by the tray. Extremely rare circumstance. I think I've only seen it once, personally.
Yeah, same.
And I've seen way more aces than that. So I don't think that it's really a big deal that
but
counts.
For that one person you saw, that's a
I just think it great I just think them. It helps. I think the
me.
The
it helps
it,
me.
It does. I was getting there.
Oh, sorry.
It helps you. You're aceless. You've got a better chance now.
It's not going to happen. But
I don't think you carry floppy enough discs.
It's fun to dream.
But
I'm going to carry an entire bag of cumulus.
I think overall the point of the rule is cumulonimbi?
Well, that's like a cloud.
Why?
Like,
isn't that the point of it?
Just a lot of gurus.
All right,
I don't know.
Whatever. But I think the rule is intended to simplify things for the players, in that if you take away ambiguity and make it super simple, like it's wedged, it counts, instead of how did it enter the basket? Like,
yeah,
forget about it. You're like, if it's in there, it counts. If it's wedged, it counts. If it's sitting, if it's resting on the edge of the tray, it counts. If it's, which did count before, by the way.
Yep.
So, I think that's a good distinction. I have no issue with it. It's such a rare shot. It will be weird because it's probably going to happen at some point, but the pros don't play with discs that are flexible enough to do that. I can't remember the last pro tournament where I saw a pro wedge a disc on the front side and have it stay. I just can't remember it.
It was either Paul or Barsby.
That's right. That's
Ledgestone.
Right. It was Paul.
And that
Paul.
Big yeah. one over the field.
Over the baseball field. Yeah.
Sorry.
So like that technically
that was an ace
would have been an ace. But I stand corrected immediately.
Look at Joe's memory.
Good job, Joe.
Got all
you
doubters.
You're totally right. But what's the other one? I can't remember another one. So
this guy, David, on hole 7 at Taylor when I was playing. I was getting ready to tee off at 8, and it skipped into the side of the basket and stuck, and everyone was stoked and then made fun of him because he didn't get an ace on an awesome shot.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a rare enough shot that I don't care, but I also think that people in the sport will refer to it. You know, like even skip aces have a kind of negative connotation, little stigma to them. So like, I think even you'll get terms like cage ace.
Listen, that is going to, like, now that that is legal, that will be my first ace.
It's not legal yet.
Okay.
These are proposed rules.
So days before it's legal, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And the next day I'll be like, it's legal. And be like, hey, Rob, remember that ace? You're like, ooh. Oh, wow.
If only you'd done it a couple weeks later.
Totally. Or you'd be like, well, you're not a PDGA member, so it doesn't really matter, bro.
So, it's going to be, those are going to be asterisk aces for a long time. Like, it's going to take a full 15 years.
Will that ever be a thing? Like, the same way that, like, regionally 2 meters a thing, 2 meters isn't somewhere else. It's up to the tournament director. Will there be a world where it's like...
Well, I mean, in non-sanctioned tournaments, absolutely. People could... If it's not a PGA tournament, they could absolutely not follow that.
Can... Hey, local people, UFOs, I'm talking to you. Can we just start claiming that the disc going through chains with at least two people willing to witness just counts as an ace? Can we do that? Can we just agree on that for our local rules? Because then it just counts. Because I've done that multiple times.
So there are plenty of other ones. There's like 10 total proposed rule changes. I don't really hate any of them. And I don't really think that any of them have like dramatic. The only other one I wanted to bring up next was
if your name is Paul, you're allowed to step through putts anytime you want.
So I'm gonna call it the Johnny McRae and Nico LoCastro rule, because it's a combined rule.
If you believe in a conspiracy, you
sorry,
go ahead.
So it's a combined thing where potty breaks are allowed. Remember Johnny McRae calling out Paul Macbeth for doing a potty break? And that distractions are no longer considered a reason to reset the timing. Like that. So that's the Nico LoCastro part.
I heard a bird over there. Give me my 30 seconds back.
So this is basically a fuck you to Johnny McRae and Nico LoCastro. And just being like, Nico, you can no longer claim that a leaf moving is why you had to take a minute and 45 seconds to make your putt. And Johnny McRae, let the person go potty.
Someone needs to take a shit. Let him take a shit, bro.
Yeah. Like, fuck you. You guys are both assholes. Knock it off. That's the last one.
I like it. I like both of those.
If you would like to check it out, it's on the PDGA website. You can look at all the rest of it.
And I'll tell you right now, Rob and I have both equally reset for putts or drives or whatever because of distraction, but never gone over the time allotted. Not a single time have either of us been like, oh, let me restart my 30-second routine because a dog farted 50 feet away from me. Like, it's been like, whoop. And actually, those distractions I speak of are our children 95% of the time. And it's just like, okay, all right, let me pull it together. And then there's another one as soon as we throw. Because
my favorite is to my kids, where it's like, Des, you have to be quiet when people are putting. Okay, Dad.
He learned that from Henry, though. Yeah.
Dad, do I need to be quiet now? Des, please. Joe's putting. Dad, what about now?
Can I putt too? Yes. Now that I missed my putt, Des, why don't you go ahead and
go ahead.
Take your putt.
Just putt it out.
Go take your putt. Well, your kids also have the awesome, like, you're on the box and just about to, like, start your X step and they, like, grab you or, like, just run into you. Or my favorite is just, I mean, this sounds really bad. And there are millions of warnings, and it's very rare that it still happens. What happens when Robin putts? He kicks with his left leg.
Yep.
And I've seen him kick his kids multiple times.
Multiple times.
And he'll tell them, like, you need to move back. I kick when I putt. Get out of here. And they'll still. And actually, I got to just do two more little Robin's kids things. I've seen now both his oldest and his middle child both backhand each other on follow-throughs because the other one is standing too close to the other during the drive.
Yep.
And it's like the first time it happened, it was his oldest being upset that the middle child would dare do that when he was that close.
Literally.
And like, then literally like the next week, he did the exact same thing to his brother.
Yep. Yeah. No, it was fully intentional, I believe.
Very different reactions from the kids, but that's just because they're very different boys. One was like, oh. And the other one was like, I'm going to go to the hospital. I think I'm dead.
Yeah.
Yay, PDG.
All right, PDGA rules. Woo! So there's plenty of others. Check them out. Obviously, none official at this point. These are all proposed rule changes for 2022. So I think largely trying to simplify existing rules and make it easier for TDs and players to make calls in the field. So I think overall just mostly decent. I could see the wedgie thing with the disc being like a point of contention. There's another rule about ghost cards that I think people would be annoyed with. And then obviously I could see people accusing the PDGA with the B tier thing of just trying to make it like a money sort of thing, like forcing people
or gatekeeping or whatever.
Yeah, like forcing people to subscribe to them to play tournaments that they love.
Forcing people to get vaccinated.
But
or
ultimately,
masks.
Like our tournaments are highly impacted and player fields and the wait lists are crazy. And I just don't think that's really a thing.
Can I propose one rule?
And if you're really intent on competing, I think you probably should have a PDGA membership, and that would give you a leg up on the people out there in terms of registering. So I just don't know. I think that's fine. I don't have an issue with that.
I like to propose a 2023 rule. Non-disc golfers, so caddies, anybody in the gallery, any like media people on the field close to the disc golfers, may drink whatever beverages they'd like as long as they are using koozies with sponsor logos on them.
Ah. Funny enough, there is a rule in there proposing that caddies must be 13 years or older.
What a random age.
I'm
weird
assuming
age.
There has been problems at tournaments where maybe, you know, it's most likely like a dad and his kid and it just slowed down play or something like that. I don't know.
But I'm saying something works with kids, like weird age.
Yeah.
Really weird age cutoff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Idlewild, you ready?
I'm wild about Idlewild.
Yeah. I'm going to just open with this. If you didn't watch the final round of MPO live, I'm sorry, but you missed out.
Yep.
You missed out on, and Jomez doesn't recapture it the way that
I haven't watched it. Went down. I watch it live, and that's all I need.
It doesn't give you the same feeling, the same build up, the same anticipation. It was incredible. At one point, we had a shot at a 6-player playoff.
With that said, I just want to stop real quick. If you think Nate's and Ian aren't the bee's knees with live commentary, you can get the fuck out.
You know what? While I appreciate you, I don't have an issue with people not liking certain commentators and liking other ones. That is sports.
But the Nate's and Ian!
Like, some people like certain commentators over other ones, and I don't have a problem with that. That's you. You like the way a certain person does it. And
you love Joe Buck. You don't have a world. Like, you don't have an opinion in my world.
Some people don't have souls, and that's okay. And we have to just, those people still deserve to live. It's fine.
But it's Nate's and Ian.
It was nonetheless.
Okay, sorry.
Let's get back to the real action. So Andrew Marweed and Kyle Klein coming down to it. Andrew Marweed, by the way, did not have a single bogey until the 17th hole of the final round, which opened the door for Kyle Klein.
Yep.
And at that point, we have a potential for...
And mega rounds by chase card people.
Oh, yeah.
Mega rounds to even just like make it close to this wild tie.
So going into 18, we were looking at, in the clubhouse, we had Kevin Jones, Calvin Heimberg, Joel Freeman, and Drew Gibson in the clubhouse, finaled at 24 down.
Yep.
So Andrew Marweed and Kyle Klein were standing at the tee box at 24 down. So at that point, at the beginning of hole 18, we were looking at, if they don't birdie this hole, we have a 6 player playoff. And if they don't at least par it, all these guys off the chase card
are having a playoff.
So it was wild. And then Andrew Marweed and Kyle Klein both managed to pretty much posterize one of the hardest holes on the course.
Yeah.
You know, Kyle Klein had a nice little kick, and so did Andrew Marweed, I think. Could be wrong on that. But nonetheless.
No, he forehanded around. He had a nice little.
You're right. Yeah. And then they both managed to just park the bejesus out of it.
Yeah. I mean, the most ultimate park job, just to like take a little step back, Heimberg gave the most amazing posterize in the sense that his tee shot was trash.
Yeah.
And he put it under the basket.
Yeah, it was like almost a leaner.
Like, that was like if
that was incredible. Incredible.
They were pumped just looking and, like, I think that's good. And then they got to him like, oh.
Yeah, it kept being like, oh, Calvin's not putting yet. And they're like, is that a disc under the basket? Oh, yeah, that's a disc, like, in the shadow of the basket.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, anyways, going back to it.
But going back,
Kevin had a putt to stay with it, too, right in the edge mm-hmm. of the circle with a little bit of a ceiling issue, and he had a little... And I don't blame him. So I'm the same way. Granted, I'm nowhere close to the putter that Kevin is, but I would rather get in a deep squat than go to a knee or go to knees. But that proved bad for him because he ended up hitting a branch and was done right then.
Yeah.
But both Marweed and Klein were clean in the circle. And it was basically like, I think Klein hit his putt from 17, and it was like, unless Marweed misses a 15 footer, we're going on. And of course he did not.
Yeah. I bet it going into these final seven holes, it was just nonstop. Yep. Like the live was switching around. Drew Gibson was playing incredible. This is a kind of terrifying version of Drew Gibson. If Drew Gibson can continue to putt like he's been doing for the last couple of tournaments, he's a problem. He has all the driving skill in the world, and if he can just be like a 85% C1X guy, that's a problem. Like he is not only elite distance, but he is elite accuracy at virtually every distance level.
But also realize he did that once out of three rounds.
That's true. True.
I mean, granted, it was amazing for that round and got him there.
So what was, let me look. Let me, what was his C1X for the tournament? So Oh, that's just for that round.
Okay.
Okay. So, but he was 100% C1X for the
final.
For the final.
Well, yeah. He was like, what? Wasn't he some insane down that round? Like, 14 down or 12 down?
12 down.
12 yeah. down. Like, yeah. No bogey, 12 down is mega. Yeah. But once again, he had to do that to get into third, which yep. means his first two weren't
totally
all the way there. And that's kind of, I mean, I don't mean to shit on him because that's amazing what he did.
So his Idlewild total C1X was 90%.
Still fantastic.
That's fantastic.
Still fantastic.
If Drew Gibson can C1X 90%, he is going to be top five in virtually all of the remaining tournaments. Like, if he can do that, that's what he does. I mean, he's got the distance. Well, totally,
but the issue's always been the consistency.
Yep. But he doesn't look like, you're even watching him, and we said it a couple weeks ago.
He's putting naturally. He's a natural putter. It's not like, I've watched for so many years him like
where you know keeping he's his miss
like
it.
Or it, like just weird mental things to try and get it where he like stepped to his mini with like both his feet together and like popped it in the basket because somehow in his mind that was like, well, yeah. I made that 4 days ago, so I'll just keep that going. Like, yep. A confident putting Drew, and by confident, it's and we talk about this a ton, or we have talked about this a ton. It's like, you know what? My putting stroke is not there right now. I maybe will shift how I putt right now, but I know when I go back tomorrow or the next day, I'm going to go right back to where I was, and I'm not going to abandon my total putt stroke. And he's been the guy to like abandon it.
Yeah.
And if he can just, and that's honestly, it's just like, just stick with it, Drew. Like, just stick with it. Just be like, you know what? I had a bad day, but I can focus in and get it. It's not because of the form. It's not whatever. There's just something that wasn't there. Like, let me just take a breather, get back and go back to it instead of being like, I was doing this really weird, like, stagger Anheuser putt and it went in for the last four holes. I'm going to start my next round doing the same thing. Like, stick with what you put the most time into. And he is, obviously.
He looks confident and it looks fantastic. And honestly, I looked before we did this podcast. I only have two recorded UDIS rounds at 100% C1X.
I don't have any. I think I have one.
And my regular C1X is like 50%. So,
which is like 20% more than mine.
Like, not great. In fact, really bad. Imagine.
Well, that's why we're not pros, Robin, but also
because imagine we can't throw like Katrina Allen blindfolded. That's the type of C1X we're talking about here. Like, real bad. So, it's fantastic to see someone.
If you played
that
horse
has,
against cat, would you just do 12 foot putts nonstop?
I probably would.
Is that do Fuck. You?
That's so fucked up.
Do you ever?
That's so fucked up.
Play like horse with basketball. Well, you weren't a basketball player. You're the type of basketball player, Robin, that I'll be honest, that if I played against you, I would just do like layups.
I can hit layups.
I don't know, Robin. I've seen you dribble a basketball.
Wait, I don't have to dribble to do a layup.
I would do.
Horse.
I would do like a.
There's no traveling.
I would
in
do.
Horse.
I would do one of those like dribble between.
Wait,
the
is
legs
there traveling in horse and basketball?
For sure, you still gotta dribble and shit.
But I could just stand by the basket and like.
Yeah, but you can be like, I'm gonna do like a butt between the legs and then layup.
Oh well, then I'd be fucked.
Yeah, and that's what I would do to you, nonstop.
Wait, the basketball can go between the legs?
Yeah.
Huh.
Have. I feel like we've watched Warriors games together.
That seems unnatural.
Robin's below waistline.
And it doesn't hit
Robin's your... below waistline. He doesn't see what happens but
the ball doesn't
below hit... anybody's waist. He just sees waist up.
How do you keep the ball from hitting your legs or your balls or like, and then like, what do you do on the other side? You're supposed to like, the ball is supposed to just make it to your hand?
Yeah. Huh. You purposely pass it to your other hand through your legs.
That seems...
And low enough that the balls don't get aggravated.
That seems wasteful. I don't understand why you would need to do that.
Well, next week, Steph Curry will be on this show, it's and like you can talk to him about it.
Sounds like showboating to me.
Showboating ass motherfuckers. Get out of here. Anyway, sorry, Kat. I didn't really mean to talk shit to you.
But anyways, back to after that very long digression. Kyle Klein and Andrew Marweed ended up birdieing the 18th hole to go to a playoff. It ended up lasting two holes. Kyle Klein's drive on the hole one, that was incredible. It just Kyle Klein pretty much overpowered Marweed.
He did
at the end. Like he just
was absolute. Smash.
He just smashed. And both times. And it was just like, how do you answer that? He was so much closer on the final hole, the second hole.
Like, how does Discmania...
Like, Marweed was in a position...
Get these dudes.
Yeah. Kyle Klein is going to win a lot of tournaments.
Yep.
A lot of tournaments. And he was a little misty. In his post game interview, that was nice.
It was really weird. He was like, "Fuck you, Eagle."
Yeah.
He didn't do that.
It was fun to watch. Kyle Klein, you can't help root for him, and it's
And Marweed too. Marweed's gonna do some stuff too.
Marweed's been around.
Marweed, but he's major, still kind of super forehand, young though too.
Forehand dominant guy.
Yeah.
So
would you say he is, aside from the dude with like no touch that throws 77 miles per hour forehand, would you say Marweed is like the closest to Eagle forehand power?
He's pretty close.
In the game right now?
Yeah. He's still not quite that level.
Not there, but I'm saying closest.
I'd say Kyle Kline and Marweed have very similar forehands. Like they're pretty much throwing the same.
But that turnover,
pairing it up with the forehand, the backhand.
Yeah, that turnover, slight turnover cloud breaker just was.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss. Yeah. Like, wow.
Wow.
Like,
yep. And then I believe the final approach was like a tactic. Yep. Something like that.
Yep.
And just absolutely parked and just no doubt, you know.
Well, Marweed unfortunately was behind a tree.
He was in a rough position. And it was just after Klein's drive, it was just.
And I saw it too. And I know the commentators were just trying to keep it alive, but they're like, he'll be fine. I'm like, no, that was real bad.
Yeah.
That was real bad.
It was obvious after the drives that Marweed needed a miracle shot. And that Kyle Kline was set up for a perfect approach, and he, not to discount it, it was a difficult approach given the slope of the green, sloping towards OB,
yep,
that whole way. But I mean, absolutely parked, and the balls to just get that done. That was fantastic. So. We've been watching Kyle Kline, you know, for about a year now, talking about him, and he finally got a big win, and this is the first of many, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. He had that B-tier, whatever, random one in the middle that no one wanted to go to.
Yep.
FPO, Pedro Good.
Yeah, I mean, it.
Missy gave her a run. Missy was in the lead for a while, actually.
Yeah, it was not as dominant as before.
Owen and Missy, you're too. Like, I mean, you still won picks, but
that's true.
You were winning by a ton for a minute. I was like, I ain't got no chance. You got Missy. It was like Missy, Owen, and then Paige.
Yeah,
and that might have just been mid round, like when they were already playing, and it was. Paige hadn't started yet. But still, it looked real dire. But Paige played well. Like, it's if she's clicking, it's a, I mean, I guess any course is a good course for Paige if she's clicking.
Yeah.
But distance can do you a lot on this course as long as you can miss some trees.
And I mean, to be honest, you know, we had Missy Gannon take some pretty big numbers towards the end.
Yeah.
And even Paige Pierce took some as well. So, really just some kind of fall apart. They were
each trying to give it to each other.
Yeah. Some uncharacteristic kind of fall apart numbers in that final round that changed things. So, you know, ultimately Paige Pierce wins by three strokes. And that looks about right, you know, given she shot minus two in the final round and Missy Gannon shot minus one. So, you know, she still extended her lead.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sarah Hokum I thought would do better. But, you know, Missy Gannon I think just has to be in the conversation every single week as a top.
I think so.
Like, in my opinion, going forward on every single FPO tournament, Paige Pierce, Missy Gannon, and Katrina Allen are the players that probably should be the top three conversation.
Until Euros are back.
Yeah, until Tatar is back, Salonen, Bloomroos.
Yep.
You know, we saw those tournaments. Well, we didn't see them, but they are
Available.
They're playing in Europe.
We know the outcomes, so. I do want to just throw in before we like run through scores, unless you have anything else to.
I know, I'm good.
Did you at all just like shout out to hometown hero, James Proctor was on OTB Skins.
Yeah.
And
did he get any money?
He did. He had like $500. He got like one skin that pushed like four times and like a CTP. And you can tell he doesn't know his bag super well. Cause he was just way too strong for everything. He was there was like a big drive one. I was like, it was like him, Uliberry, Chris Clemens, and Trevor Harbolt, which I think Harbolt can get out there. Clemens for sure can, lefty though. Mm-hmm. But if you were to just be like, these four dudes, who is the guy who hands down should win the distance?
Yeah.
And he limped it and didn't flip it up because the entire round, he was just turning things over. He had some beautiful shots, some beautiful putts. He represented well, but I could tell, like, camera, maybe just not knowing his diss. He made a good little statement about, like, I don't tour because, like, I'm a special ed teacher in Seattle, and I love the kids, yep. and I don't want to tour. I want to make a difference in kids' lives. That's the same reason that I don't tour.
Proctor's a great dude.
He totally is. He's rad.
Yeah.
But you could just see, like, the crazy power that he had.
Yeah.
But he also, the fun part was, I guess, like, Germ lent him, like, a 15 sexy bird that he almost lost a few times.
Oh, Jesus.
And, like, threw into some trees, and Yuli kept just being, like...
Pro problems.
Kept being, like, you know, it's like a $4,000 disc, dude. Like, you need to chill out. Like, figure it out, bro.
I don't know about $4,000.
Oh, I know. Well, it's Yuli. It's just Yuli, you know.
Yeah.
Pumping all up. But anyways, I just want to shout out hometown hero, James Proctor. He's a super rad dude. Great disc golfer. Super fun to see him on that. But we can run through. Do we want to talk about that, or just want to talk about
who won? I honestly, the European, the Kanapiste European Disc Golf Championship, I would rather watch a little bit more rather than give an uninformed opinion on what happened.
I will give one small, semi-informed opinion. If you go like 4 years back, if you go the last time there was the President's Cup, that's what they called it, right? Is that what they called it? What do they call it? Like the U.S. versus European tournament they
President's
had?
President's Cup.
There was like one of
Thank you for asking me a question while I was pouring.
Sorry. I just want to make sure I knew it right. A big difference between, you know, even with Seppo there and whatnot, and even in Simon, but a big difference, like if you go back to like KJ Naibo, players like that who were fantastic, who still are, I'm sure. The distance game has been pretty dominated by U.S. players for a long time. And the little bit I watch, which is not enough, and of course with like Albert Tom,
Seppo,
Vinyl Michela, like we're
by the way, Seppo, where you at, bro?
It was his birthday weekend. He was, he's way down there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a myth. That is gone. These Euro dudes and women are absolute bombers.
I am fully looking forward.
I'm surprised UC didn't just like end the tournament and say like, you're all signed to Discmania. I need you all. I need everyone who can throw far. You need to be Discmania because that's our brand.
I am fully looking forward to the future of disc golf with a European Pro Tour and just it not being a foregone conclusion that American players are the best players in the world. I think that we're going to see more and it's going to be great. And the competition and the level of play is going to rise on all levels across the board. And I'm looking forward to it. We're seeing it in FPO right now. And I think we're going to see it in FPO coming or MPO coming soon. And I love it. I'm so ready. I want to see this sport push each other and I love seeing it being more than just an American thing. So I'm pumped. I'm stoked.
Do you ever see? And I'm looking it up right now to make sure I have the right movie in mind. Do you ever see Best of the Best?
I don't think so.
Oh, you didn't have TV the way I had TV. Oh no, my gosh.
I was only allowed to watch, like, you know, Arthur and, you know.
So, like, Best of the Best.
Was Best of the Best on PBS?
No.
And then I didn't watch
it. So, Best of the Best, it's on, I'll tell you right now, though, Robin, tuck this in your back pocket. Best of the Best is on Netflix right now.
What?
Best of the Best is on Netflix right now. Best of the Best is a 1989 martial arts, like, action movie.
Okay.
Where the U.S. national karate team is in the Olympics, in the finals. I mean, I think they go through other teams, but it ends up with them against the Korean national team.
Okay. So this is like Bloodsport Light?
Lots of similar traits. And I will tell y'all, if you did not know, Bloodsport might be top 10 for me. Kumite, I love Bloodsport. Jean-Claude Van Damme, I own that DVD as soon as I could. Like,
did you see the new Jean-Claude Van Damme Volvo commercial?
No, I don't want to.
Okay, so Volvo has these, like, self-driving, I guess, semis. And they did a commercial.
Is it him just doing splits?
Splits between them while they're driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool thing.
Yeah. And he's like
JCVD.
Yeah. And
he's still rad.
And he's have like, I seen, he's probably pushing 55 or something like that.
Easily.
And
have I seen pretty much all of his movies? Yeah. What's your point? Do I love the majority of them? Yeah, what's your point? Lionheart was rad. Bloodsport, rad. Nothing wrong with that. Time Cop, that was all right. Anyway, Kickboxer,
rad.
Anyway, he's not in this movie.
How do you feel about Steven Seagal?
Trash.
Good.
Absolute trash.
Okay, good.
In
thank you.
Every level
thank you.
Of the world.
I appreciate
absolute
it. I just wanted to make trash. Sure. I just want to make sure. Okay.
Yeah, good. No. We're
on
no.
the same page. All right.
Anyway, it's like, you know, this body of awesome martial arts against like the U.S. And, you know, you got to have that U.S. pride and it's rad. And I feel like, they're this powerhouse team. Like, I don't know how we're going to beat them. Like, I feel like there's a world that will come around where it's like the U.S. team going against the Europe. Like, because right now, President's Cup is Europe. Not just like Sweden or Germany or whatever. I would love
to see a President's Cup that is like competitive, honestly.
Gonna happen.
Because
next time it happens, it's going to be competitive.
It's been pretty dominant U.S. wins, and I would be stoked to see something competitive. That'd be great.
Evelina, and Tatar, Bloomroos, add someone else. Are there four women in the U.S. that are going to take them out?
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. All right. You ready to do a deer review?
Yeah.
We didn't do the rundown, but.
We did do the rundown. Kyle Klein won. Paige Pierce won. One just shout out that I do want to throw out. Tied in 10th place. A really cool, nostalgic Idlewild top 10 finish. Boss man himself.
The Feldberg.
Doctor. Disc Doctor Feldberg. Mm-hmm. Cool. I don't know if there's footage. I'd love to watch some Feldberg do some Idlewild, but I also am fine not ever watching Feldberg do some Idlewild. But good for him.
Yeah. I mean, the man can still play.
Oh, yeah.
All right. It is time for our world famous deer review, our disc and beer pairing, where we take a disc, we take a beer. We reviewed them both and let you know whether you should bring it on the course. Tonight we have the Mockingbird by Lone Star Discs. 7-speed, 5-glide, -2 turn, 1 fade. Affectionately referred to as the Kaka!
Kaka!
It even has it in quotes on the disc. So
just, you know, that's how it's not Kaka. It's
caca. You have to make sure and do it that way. And we're going to pair that with Hazy Memory by Lagunitas Brewing Company, an 8% hazy IPA. And this, for once, should be a beer that virtually everyone listening should be able to
get. Yeah, maybe limited release, but if you get there, you can get it. It's released.
And after immediately widely. After I say that, I realize that Euros might be a problem. And
I've seen Euros get some crazy stuff.
I think so. And then Canada could also be a problem. But, you know, what the fuck, Lagunitas? You're owned by Heineken. You should be able to globally distribute this beer.
Give to everyone. Elliot, I know you're listening. Fly this with the flagpole. Make it happen. Thanks.
So, yeah, 8% hazy IPA, hazy memory. I can relate to that, as I don't even remember what disc we reviewed last week. But here we are.
Oh, I know. It was a Jackalope.
Oh, I know. You know.
And we got some, and they're kind of gross. But OTB's hooking up some cleaner ones.
So, where do you want to start, Joe? Disc or beer? And do you want me to start, or do you want you to start?
No, I'll start disc. Disc. Plastic, we had... Oh, did they even tell us what the plastics are? We had two different plastics. I don't know the names of the plastics. Rob's looking it up. One is definitely more like a...
Bravo and Lone Star Glow.
Okay, so Lone Star Glow is still like a pretty gummy, like Champ Glow, like similar to, I guess, Discmania, but it's like super flexy for a glow. The Bravo is like Star, but also kind of a little more gummy. It's like almost in between Star and G-Star, but not like the gummy, bubbly G part of the G-Star. It has a really weird like bevel on the, like, I guess the thumb track, I would call it, the flight plate, where your thumb meets it.
Yeah.
And... Listen, I will get there. I actually really enjoyed this disc, so I'm going to put that out front because I'm like going to talk a little shit before I get there. A lot of weird molding issues. Like, there's a lot of weird flashing inside the rim and on the edge of the rim. Kind of just funky, which in my mind means... They are a small company, but they're doing it all themselves. They're not having it molded anywhere else. Like, they're totally doing it themselves, which is like super commendable. Aside from that, it's a pretty neat disc. Like, I picked it up, and like I said, on the top of that flight plate, I felt really weird with, like, I don't know if I want to call it a bevel or what I want to call it, but there's like a weird, not thumb track, but there's just a weird little bump almost. But it flies pretty dang similar to the numbers that are there. I threw a lot of throws with the Lone Star Glow, to the point that I realized that Rob and I had to switch discs because we did that a few weeks ago with the Hydrogen disc where we had different premium or different plastics, and one was definitely more stable than the other. The Glow is definitely more stable than the Bravo.
Also, less domey. Phew. Take a pretty, like, a close-ish look. I set them on the table, and the Bravo's got a little bit more dome.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't even see
which
that.
Which I think is part of the...
Not a ton.
They're still both domey as fuck.
They're definitely like, very domey.
If I would, you hand this disc to me, the first thing I would tell you is that, good God, that's domey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it has all the dome.
It's funky.
It is the dome. They should have named this disc the dome. The caca dome.
Caca dome?
Caca dome.
Anyway. So my first, I'm going right past that. My first, like, initial thoughts were...
I mean, the bird's tail on here is...
My first initial thoughts were, it reminded me, especially throwing the Lone Star Glow, or, yeah, that's what it is. It reminded me a lot of an FD, and it reminded me a decent amount of a Glow FD. And the more I threw it, switching discs back and whatnot, realized it was definitely not as stable as an OG Glow. And maybe, like, I guess what I'm saying is the numbers on this for me are pretty spot on. Doesn't glide as
totally agree
far as an FD. Little more understable than, not a little more, a decent amount less stable than an OG Glow. Pretty in line with like a star, like the Glow one is in line with like a Star, or not Star, an S line FD, and the Bravo might be even a little bit less stable than that, maybe closer to like a G line FD, but they're pretty darn FD ish. If you can throw an FD, you can throw this disc and have a ton of fun with it.
Joe's dead on here. His initial assessment was way off. I should say.
Figured it out.
He did. He made it there, so that was fine. This disc, if you want to power down a hyzer flip shot, you can get some really awesome, perfectly straight hyzer flips,
and they'll go far
out of this. That will go nice and far. When I teased this disc probably a few weeks ago, maybe like 4 weeks ago, I called it a baby mantra. So like something like a baby mantra or a baby heat, it is definitely that minus two. So if you want to crank on it and throw it hard, you need to give it air and you need to throw it for a right-handed player. You need to aim left, give it air, and throw it hard.
And it might not come back
at all. Let it work, and it's not going to come back, and it will give you a full flight line. If you want to throw it straight in the woods, you need to power it down and you know,
give it a little hyzer.
Give it a nice, easy hyzer, and you can flip it up straight and get some really, really awesome hyzer flip lines out of it that will finish right if you want them to, or even fade out if you get your speed control right.
Yeah.
It really is about speed control with this disc. The flashing is weird. It doesn't bother me at all. I tend to have my thumb close to the rim, so that didn't bother me, but it does. It is there.
Yeah, when you're power gripping, it doesn't really get in at all.
On the top end, you rub your finger about it. There is like a transition between the dome, but it is a crazy domey, crazy glidey disc that has a lot of use. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I guess I'll transition right into it, but it's not something that would supplant an FD for me because I can do similar stuff with FDs. And in fact, I did when we threw it in the field because Joe was telling me this is a Glow FD, and I threw back-to-back. I threw my S-line, nearly aced, by the
truth.
Way.
Truth.
Not aced, nearly second shot, you know. Practice aced.
I mean, didn't ace. It still wouldn't have been.
Because Joe was like, oh, this is like Glow FD. And I was like, nope. Like, let me pull out. I grabbed my S line FD.
Something Robin's never said.
And
you just got it? Yeah. Anyway, keep going.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, keep going.
And threw the shot with both of them, and sure enough, they're both there. It's a lot of fun, and it's a great disc, and the glide and the understability makes it accessible for a lot of different people, and for someone with power, you can get some really, really big turnover lines. For someone looking to grab extra distance, you can use this on a hyzer line or a hyzer flip line and get yourself into low, say you're like a 300-foot player, type thing, and you're trying to get to 330. This is like, I would say this is the disc for you.
And I'll say, so just because it was last week and because we also threw them together for most of a round, to equate it to a jackalope, less stable, less speed, less glide, but
yeah,
similar flight, in the sense, when you juice up a jackalope, it flies very similar, and this is like the lower speed. Like
I would think we could throw a jackalope a solid 30 feet farther.
Oh, if not more. If not more, but I'm saying...
I don't know about more, because it's still 7 speed, and I think that I
jackalope's 9.
Is it 9? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're probably right then. Because I think that I could... I haven't tried it.
You might be right.
I haven't tried it, but I think that I could probably on a really big left flying Anheuser, or sorry, you know, left release Anheuser, get this mockingbird to, but that's also a super unique, crazy open shot
that I'll say right now, and I'll be totally honest, and I'm sure if people have listened long enough, they know, like that's a shot that I can't consistently throw, and you can.
Yeah.
Like, it's true. Not a regular golf shot, but it's like one of your weird little quirky expertise that you can throw.
Yeah. And on top of that, I would prefer not to do that. I would rather throw the jackalope on a straight turnover low line.
Well, it's just, it's touchy because of the speed and the and understability.
Wind
like,
conditions.
You really have to understand the wind and super touch your shot. Like, it's crazy touchy. Like, you could, your shot that you think is going to be a flip up, slight laser turnover could become a cut roller with like 5 miles per hour wind.
Yeah. No, this is a disc.
Still super fun though. Like, don't get me wrong.
In my opinion, this is a disc. It's got dome. Give it air. That's my general opinion of discs like this. When they're that domey, give them air, give them room to work. So like the times you use a disc like this, uphill shots.
Oh, yeah.
Tailwind shots. Anytime you have a wide open space where you need to get just distance only, put it up in the air and throw it as hard as you can and let it work. It will glide. That's what it does. That's what it's supposed to do. So those three scenarios. So tailwind shot, uphill shot, wide open fairway. That's what it's for. I know I said previously that you can power down and hyzer flip it like a straight arrow. That's true. I would still rather just do that with a putter or a mid-range. So, personally, that's up to you.
If there's a wooded shot that you need a little bit of turn and that glide, low ceiling, like that can get you that. Yeah, right. That needs to rise a little bit. There's a place for this disc, and I'm just going to start. I'm going to plow forward.
Yeah. Well, we haven't done the beer yet at all.
Oh, you're right. Shoot.
So
let's talk about Hazy Memory. Hey, it's doing its job.
Hazy Memory is a pretty solid hazy
8% hazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, as you can tell by the fact that we nearly forgot to talk about it. As Joey.
So this is what is Mind Haze. The other one, this is like the big brother to Mind Haze.
Yeah.
And like a much bigger brother. It's a lovely hazy beer. It's not a super juice beer. It definitely has like some citrus, maybe like a clementine-y citrus, not that like more grapefruit-ish.
Yeah, it's definitely more in the
orange. More mellow orangey nose and the flavor, but it's like almost like and this is going to be a crazy one. And this might be another thing. And this, I almost feel like you might know better because of your weird PBS household. I don't know. Have you ever had Tang?
Yeah. Yeah, Tang. But we were more of a Country Time lemonade.
Yeah. House. See, we didn't really do a lot of Country Time. We did a lot of Fruit Punch Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
But we were like the fancy cats who it was like already sugar added kind. We just put scoops in water. This is like a watered down Tang IPA almost.
Yeah. I can see that.
Is it Tang because it's tangerine? Did I just figure that out? And that's the point of why it's called Tang? I didn't know that?
I don't think so. It's definitely very orangey in terms of the citrus. Like, if I had to explain the citrus flavor, I'd say like probably orange and then maybe secondarily not citrus, obviously. But some mango.
You ever have a cutie that like maybe just hang out a little too long? Overripe? Yeah. Overripe. That's kind of what I'm getting.
It's like an overripe cutie with that same kind of West Coast bitter hop finish.
Yeah. Yeah, not crazy IBUs.
Yeah.
I mean, it lets you know it's an IPA, but it's...
We should note that we are drinking this from a crowler.
Right.
Meaning that it was draft, you know, like...
Exactly.
Earlier today.
But earlier today, not a crowler from, you know, days ago, which we've definitely done before, too.
Good times. That's probably the best possible, short of straight draft off the tap at the brewery. This is as close to as good as it gets.
But yeah, no, it's a nice tasty little beer. You can get it. I think most places it's limited release, but it comes out in cans here and there, and they have good distribution. We're lucky enough that we can get it in crowlers probably more months out of the year than not where we live. It's a lovely little beer.
Yeah. Totally endorse this. 8%.
You would not, if we just drank this and didn't see it on the can, on the crowler, or online, I don't think I would tell you it was 8%. Yeah.
Pours a nice pale color. It's a decent hazy. So
yeah, it's good. I drink that on course.
All right, Joe.
What's your
opinion on the disc?
On the disc, like, it's super fun. It's neat. And that's kind of just where it is. It's neat. It just doesn't fill a role in my bag, especially because I made that switch to the Jackalope last week, and I do still have one understable escape that I'm looking to either beat a Jackalope or get a Jackalope in a different plastic to kind of take care of. Plus, I do have an OG Glow FD. And a free tail. Between all of that, it kind of takes those things that you talked about, like, this is the situation that you throw this or this or this. I'll tell you, uphill, one of the biggest reasons I still carry a free tail is because it is so clutch uphill. I can still hyzer it uphill and it'll flip up and just like crest
like
the hillside.
Stills.
Yeah, it's like fantastic. The Jackalope, I'm just pumped with. I still have an escape for the moment, for that little more understable. And then, of course, King Boo is still in my bag. So it's kind of just all still there. This is touchy, and I feel like with all the discs I just mentioned, especially like the FD and the Jackalope, I can crank a little bit harder and still be able to trust it instead of having to be like, well, I got to throw 70% or else. I like the thought of like, just throw it hard from a standstill and we'll be just fine. So it's not taking over anything, but I will tell you, when I saw the discs here in the Shedio in the first place, I goofed on them super hard. And I was like, these things are super dumb. Caw-caw! Like, this is, I'm not excited. And when we threw them, they were way, way better than I expected.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other hand, kind of knew that I was going to like it. Just, I could tell.
What?
With the dome. I mean, I just, like, when that speed of disc, like, I like...
A slightly understable 7-speed
with
glide?
This is very understable.
With glide?
This is very understable in this. But, like, when I see dome like that, I know it's something that I can, at a minimum, get cool shots with.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I know that I can get out in a field, and I can throw something... You know, like, say it's a 200-foot wide field. Like, I could throw something out to the far side of that 200-foot wide field.
Left side.
The far left side as a right-handed player. And let it just ride its way all the way to the far right side of that field. And that's fun. I like seeing shots like that. And it's not necessarily something that... you need on a regular basis. It really, honestly, is only something that's come out of the fact that Joe and I test discs in open fields that I do stuff like that, but it's still useful. Like, it comes in handy from time to time. I've had shots on our local course that, it honestly, I can throw forehand to the close to the same spot. But I've also thrown these crazy, weird, like, sky turnover flex back and gets there. And it's just like, it's something that's interesting. It's a in another circumstance, it's a useful shot, and another shot in your bag is another bullet that you have, another chance to make
bang bang
or pick up a stroke. Like that's important. So
he's carrying four kakas.
I have none in my bag, and no, I between FDs, I've got it covered. So I'm not going to bag this one. Hazy Memory, on the other hand, full on course beer. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No problem. Put it in.
Easy.
Grab it. Comes in, I believe, 12-ounce cans and not pints?
I don't think so. I think
okay,
just 12.
Just 12-ounce cans. Okay. So.
Might be four packets, six. I don't know.
I think you're right. I think it just comes in six-pack boxes.
Yeah.
So, fully endorse that. Let's go. So.
I'll drinks it up too.
So we're 2 for 4.
We're 2 for 4. Feel like that's like the placement for Macbeth the rest of the way, 2 through 4.
Ooh. Wow. I mean, that's kinder than the normal, like Paul Macbeth is done.
He's so good.
Yeah, he is good.
He's fantastic. Like, if you can be top four forever, you are amazing.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like his days of first, not that he's not going to win tournaments, because he will win tournaments, mm-hmm. but being the heavy favorite for every tournament, I think that world's disappearing. It's not disappeared, but it's on its way out. There's an uptick of amazing players. Exactly. I mean, look at Kyle Klein. Like, strong. Totally.
Yeah. No, that's true. All right. Well, that's all we got for you on this episode of the Disc Golf Podcast. Be sure to check out our sponsor, OTB Disc. Use promo code DGPODCAST. Get free shipping on your next order. After that, patreon.com/TheDiscGolfPodcast. If you love this show, you will love our pre-shows, which we do before every single episode. Patreon.com/TheDiscGolfPodcast. Subscribe and get an extra podcast every single week. It'll be the best thing you ever do. I promise.
There's so many of them at this point.
There's tons.
There's over 100. Like way over 100.
If you burned our episodes, like there's hundreds, not hundreds, probably like 100.5s of pre-shows that you could then go through.
100+.
And you could re-experience those main shows at the same time. Like, listen to the pre-show and then be like, oh my God, I really need to listen to episode 78 again because I just listened to the episode 78.
Oh, 78's a great number.
I picked that one.
That was my second cousin, his number in the NFL. If y'all didn't know, Anthony Munoz is my second cousin. Just throwing it out there.
I know. I picked the number.
My mom's cousin. It's cool. No big deal.
But it's a good time. Check it out. Lastly, drop a nice review for us on iTunes. 5 stars. Say some nice stuff. We really appreciate it when you do. In the meantime, get out there this weekend and throw stuff at stuff.
This is a song for the aceless. But those with aces, listen closely. You don't always have to huck it hard. In fact, sometimes that's not right to do. Sometimes you got to lay it up and fucking outrun an ace or two. Sometimes you got to ease if you wanna put the D's in the B's. Sometimes you got to say, hey, I'm gonna throw it softly. I'm gonna huck it gently. I'm gonna flick it smoothly. I'm gonna toss it so sweetly. And then you say, hey, I hit some metal. And then you say, wait a minute, Robin, I think I'm starting to get it now. Could you fill my throat for me? That's fucking teamwork. What's your favorite disc? That's cool with me, it's not a trespass, but I guess it works for you. What's your favorite beer? The only answer is an IPA, so let's go to the bar. And then I'm gonna flick it so sweetly, and then I'll fucking hook it softly, and then I'll fucking throw it perfectly. But then I'm gonna hook